Okay, so we're on Daf Hey Amud Beis, and we're looking at Tanur Rabbanu, which is five lines down from the top. This is a very complex and long brisa. Yes, and the Gemara is going to take it apart piece by piece. If you prepared this brisa, can you tell me what is the question that this brisa is grappling with?
Saying the same thing.
Well, if they said the same thing, then the Gemara would have asked, which it does classically in Shas, Trey Kroy Lomeli. But that doesn't appear in our Gemara. The Gemara is not exactly saying that we have a duplication here, what we call in Hebrew Kfeilut. The Gemara is asking a slightly different question.
What are they teaching us?
That they're two psukim and they're
completely different.
Exactly. They're different. There's a discrepancy, if you will, between the psukim.
What do you mean?
Okay. So if you could take out a piece of paper, if anybody has a piece of paper, and keep a scorecard here, we're going to try to find three discrepancies between the two psukim. Okay, now, what you do is, on the right side of your page, for example, you write lo yimatze, and on the left side of the page, you say lo yiroa. Okay, with a line down the middle. The first discrepancy, and here you, on your left column, lo yiroa, right number one, it says lecha. And lecha always teaches me shelcha. I'll give you an example. It says ulekachtem lachem, which is the same as lecha. Shelcha. The lulav, the esrog, has to belong to you.
Singular.
Again, the singular or the plural is irrelevant. That's a tremendous issue unto itself. But it's irrelevant to us now, because when it says lachem, it's referring to every single Jew. And it says ulekachtem lachem. That means Reuven, Shimon, Levi. Every individual has to take his own lulav. Here it says lo yiroa lecha, which means addressing itself to each individual. Chametz shall not be seen anywhere in your gvul. Okay, now move over to number one under lo yimatzei on the right side of your page, right column, and there you'll write it doesn't say lecha. Now under the difference, you'll have to make a little box sort of that's arrows coming down, because what we want to do now is the difference between the two under the first discrepancy. We'll have another few discrepancies. Chametz shel acherim. Okay, so write down chametz shel acherim. If I take the pasuk on the left side, which says lecha, now I'm asking you a trick question.
The pasuk's going under both, you're saying?
No, I'm saying if I only had the pasuk lecha, right, lo yiroa lecha, that should be on your left column. What would be the deal with chametz shel acherim?
It's
mutter.
Right. Yeah.
If on the other hand I look on the right column, which is lo yimatze, where the word lecha is absent, then the isur prohibiting possession of chametz expands to include even situations where it's not lecha, but rather it's chametz shel acherim. So if I were to ask you, what is the deal with chametz shel acherim? Do I violate an isur by possessing it or not? And you should give me a complex answer. What's going to be your complex answer? Whenever I ask for a complex answer, it means it starts with the words, it depends on. Right? So it depends. If I only had what? Start on the left column. If I only had lo yimotze lecha,
okay,
then I'm okay. It's mutu, it's permissible. If I have lo yimotze, if I have, I'm sorry, I messed that up. If I have on the left side column lo yiroa lecha, then I'm okay. If I have lo yimatze, where the Torah drops the word lecha, apparently broadening the scope of isur chametz, then even chametz shel acherim is prohibited. Now we're up to discrepancy number two. Lo yiroa means it shall not be seen. What if I hide the chametz? I go into my basement and I dig up, I dig up the ground. Maybe you've heard stories, there are a lot of famous Holocaust stories, about Jews who, before they got deported, they dug into the ground and they knew that the Germans were coming and they hid things away. Have you ever heard any of the whole slew?
They thought it was all about that they were coming to take all their money and everything, but they didn't realize they were coming to take them. So they
Right.
all their
Right, and a lot of the Jews would hide things that had religious significance. It's not just based on how much it's worth on the market, but let's say you had a becher, you know, that was handed down to you from generation, a lot of stories. So that's called hatmana. Write down the word hatmana, lo yatmin. Lo yatmin means yud tes mem yud nun. From the perspective of lo yiroya, which is on the left side of your column, it should be
okay.
Once again, we see okay? Lo yiroya is mutter. Why? Because it's not seen. But once
but
I do
it, lo yiroya not really mean seen as your possession.
So there are two ways of learning lo yiroya. One is it cannot be seen, and the other is it cannot be suitable to be seen. Roy liros. But right now, the Gemara doesn't know until we have lo yimotze. That's going to be on the right side of your column. That's discrepancy number two. On that side of the column, the Gemara doesn't know that any time it's matzui, any time I can somehow have access to it, because now again I don't know what would be if we're addressing Reuven and his chametz, but Shimon hides it. You know, like when we steal the afikomen. You know, the child hides the afikomen.
So able to be found.
So does lo yimotze mean anywhere where you could find it? Or does it mean it's accessible to you because you know where it is? I'm not 100% clear on this point. This has to be researched.
Oh.
But one thing is clear, if Reuven hides his own chametz, then although from the perspective of lo yiroya, he's okay, he's covered, he's protected, but because the Torah adds lo yimotze, which means it shouldn't be anywhere in the location of your house, therefore you violate. So now we have two chumras in lo yimotze. Number one, lo yimotze should include chametz al acherim, and number two, lo yimotze should include bal yatmin in that case. Now we have discrepancy number three. In the pasuk lo yiroya, it says b'chol gvulecha, anywhere in your gvul, presumably even beyond the confines of your home. Correct. But lo yimotze, it says bivatechem, and what does bivatechem mean?
It's in your house.
It's got to be in your house. So therefore, lo yimotze in discrepancy number three becomes what? In the first two cases of shalachem shel and bal yatmin, it became a chumra. In the third case, lo yimotze becomes what? A kula. Why? Because it's limited to vatechem. Now, lo yiroya on the left side expands the scope of the isur to include kol gvulecha. In the Lashon HaGemara, the Nafkamina, which would be in that box in the middle, is Boros, Shichin, and Ma'oros. And once again, it's not clear to me where these are located. Are these in my backyard? Or anywhere on the face of the globe? Where is this bar? Where is it? Where is it? Well, if it's in my chatzer, then the Gemara should have used, the Brisa should have used a different term. What term would the Brisa have used? Chatzer. Chatzer is a classical word.
Yeah, but I'm saying if it's lo yimotze, like why would I bother if it's around the world to find it? I can't get there. There's no access. It's not my rishus. You're probably going to give up hope on it.
You mean if the bar is somewhere in China, yeah, you know, how am I going to find it, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, but let's say, what would you say about this? You and I are neighbors.
Okay.
And you have a bar in your backyard. And my chametz is in your bar.
Do you know that?
And I know that.
Then that's different, I'm saying. Oh,
so that's the ribui, that's the inclusion of lo yiroya lecha bechal gvulecha. Even though it's outside of Reuven's
chatzer,
it's not in his chatzer, it's in Shimon's chatzer, but nevertheless, it's called bechal gvulecha. That's one way of learning.
So
wait, just one second. And another way of learning is to say no. What the Bryson wants to tell me about Bechol Gvulecha, lo yiroya lecha asiyah Bechol Gvulecha, means anywhere in Reuven's Gvul. It's not sufficient that my next door neighbor, that know I'm over here, my good buddy, has a bar and I dig my chametz into his bar. No. That's not called Bechol Gvulecha. What does the word Gvulecha mean? How do you translate it to English?
Borders.
Your Gvul. Whatever the Gvul is, borders. Your Gvul. Gvulecha. So just like it says lo yiroya lecha, which we say is shalcha, gvulecha means hagvul shalcha. So then the ribui, the expanded scope, by virtue of the phrase bechal gvulecha, goes beyond the bias, but was still within the gvul. The only problem that I have is why doesn't it say chutz? Why boros, shichin, moros? Those terms classically in shas conjure up an image which is associated with some sort of Hefkerveld, you know, a wilderness. Did you ever hear of wilderness? It's a program in Israel? No, you guys are not. Machak Bar, it's wilderness. You heard of that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Boro Sheikh and Boris is like wilderness. You know, go out there in the wilderness. That's what it usually conjures up, that identity. But here it might be B'chol Gvulech, even beyond your bodies. So again, in the three discrepancies, who can answer this question? And again, I need a complex answer. Is Bali Ra'e L'chumra or Bali Ra'e L'kula?
It depends.
Excellent, it depends. If you're talking about what?
If you're
Shalacherim or Bal Yatmin, then it's what?
Then it's
Chumra. It's a Kula, because it says L'cha to exclude.
Yeah.
And it says Yeroya, which means you can see it, as opposed to Bal Yatmin. If we're talking about Gvulecha, meaning Barashik Nemoros, then Lo Yiro becomes a Chumra. Let's flip it over to the other side. If we're talking about Lo Yimatze,
then it's anybody's stuff.
So is it a kula or a chumra? It depends. As far as shalacherim and shal bal yakmin, it's a chumra. As far as gvulecha, it's a kula. Now, what's the underlying premise of this price? Once we set up these discrepancies, and we have this scorecard in front of us, 1, 2, and 3, then what's the underlying premise of this price? About the relationship between bal yira and bal yimatze?
Whether it's yours or not?
No. What I'm asking is, you have something, an entity, a lav in the Torah called Lo Yimatza. You have another lav in the Torah called Lo Yirat. What's the premise of this Gemara?
Can't own a chametz.
That they're two different Isur. Two different lav. The Brisa, and the whole purpose of the Brisa, is to dispel that premise. If we reject that premise, what's the flip side? What's the opposite conclusion? It's not two Isur, but rather one Easter. And basically, if it's one Easter, what we're doing is we're creating a puzzle and we're filling in the pieces of the puzzle, but they all belong to one puzzle. Basically, the Torah repeated the same Easter twice. Why would the Torah do that from the perspective of this Brisa?
To add more
pieces to the puzzle. Could the Torah have phrased it all in one cohesive, cogent verse that would include both Lecha and Gvulecha and Yimatze? The answer is no. Why not? Because look at this, Rabosai. What we're going to see here by two Lavim is we're going to see a tension between the two Lavim. We're going to see not only a discrepancy, but I would go a step further. There's going to be a contradiction between the two vices. Because if I would ask you the question, am I allowed to possess chametz that belongs to a guy? What's the answer to that question? Again, a complex question.
Depends.
From the perspective of Lo Yiroya, I'm allowed to have chametz shel goy in my rishus. But from the perspective of Lo Yimatze, I'm not allowed to. So what's the bottom line tackle? Is it tug of war over here? Do I side with Lo Yiroya and I'm allowed to have chametz shel goy? But the Torah and Lo Yimatze left out the word.
No, but if they're one lav, then you have to compare them to see
what. Oh, but we don't know yet that they're one lav, right? That's going to be the punchline. And this price is going to work very hard over time to prove that it's one lav. But right now we're assuming it's two separate lavim. And not only is it two separate lavim, but there's a machlokas between two lavim. We'll call it machlokas rishonim. I mean, it's even before the rishonim. It's machlokas hamikros. One mikra says you're allowed to keep chametz shel goy in your rishus. No problem. Perfect. The other cross says, no, you can't hold on to chametz shel goy in your rishus, because what did the Torah do in Lo Yimatze? Well, what didn't it do? To be more precise, it didn't write what? Lecha. If you don't have lecha, then lecha, the ownership is not a condition in the Issur. So wait a minute. So now, if I have these shnei ksuvim ha-machishim zedzeh, I have now an irreconcilable conflict, the nafkamina of which is, can I maintain possession of a chametz shel nachri in my rishus over Pesach? So what would be your answer to that question, if not for this price?
No,
but you have to add a little proviso. How many malchus would I give you? If you violate one Easter, how many malchus do you get?
One.
No, how many lashes do you get?
One
set of 39, right?
Yeah.
Do I double it for possessing chametz? Or does it remain 39? And what does that depend upon?
Two lavs or one lav.
Correct. Is it two lavs or one lav? Now the Brisa assumes it's two separate laven. So if I possess chametz on Pesach, how many malkas should I get? 39 times 2 is 78, correct?
Yeah.
But what if I have possession of a chametz shel nachri? How many malkas should I get?
39.
Only 39. Why?
Because it only.
Because from the perspective of lo yiroa, I'm perfectly okay. It's not lecha. From the perspective of lo yimatzei, I violated the law. Halacha lemaisa, after the braisa makes of a happy harmony and becomes part of one puzzle, it's only one isa with two lavim. How many malchus am I going to get? I'm going to get 78. But when am I going to get 78? In the case of chamish al nachri, the Torah says lecha. So does lecha reveal that I made a boo-boo in my understanding of lo yimatzei, and really lo yimatzei also has to add the proviso of lecha? And the answer is that something remains, even at the end of the day, from the original premise that these are two separate lavim that contradict each other. What remains even at the end of the day?
The lecha, you're saying?
Have you seen the Gemara? What halacha is going to remain from that premise that I separate the two lavim into two separate isurim, and I view this as a nafkamina conflict? Chomesh al-Achir. What's going to remain even lamaskon?
Gvulechon? Near Gvul?
Pikdono shel nachri. Please write this down. Pikdono shel nachri is different than chomesh al-Achir. Pikdonos is the plural of what word? Pikadon. What's a pikadon in Allah? Okay, deposit, beautiful. If you were writing for Art School, I would definitely hire you. You know, I'll give you the rehire you for another year of writing for Art School. But what does it mean in deposit?
It's a collateral. It belongs to you realistically.
What's it called? There's a main concept that I want you to know in halacha. And we need a word in Lashon Kodesh. No Art School. Achrayus. Please write this down. There's something called achrayus. Now, who could break down achrayus into three different subdivisions? Okay, that would be really cool if Rashi was here to answer my question. I would probably faint on the spot, to be honest with you. Not just because I was freaked out by the miracle, but just to see Rashi. You know, I always say about Rashi that he had more Talmidim than anyone who ever walked on the face of the earth. Probably more Talmidim than Moshe Rabbeinu even. But seriously, what would you say about dividing Achrayus into three categories? Okay, let me kick it off. All right, it's the football season, so we'll kick it off. I'm the quarterback here. No, the kickoff is not the quarterback. Okay, that's bad. Okay, we'll start again. I'm the kicker. What's the first kicker called? Somebody just kicked a field goal for 63 yards. Tied the major record. Okay, good. I see you guys are up on football. I don't know if that's Lishmach or Lignah. Yesh Darshan, Yesh Darshan. It's like, you know, Noah. But be that as it may, I'll kick it off with the following. Shomer Chino.
Shomer Sachar and...
Shalom. Excellent. Three levels of Achrayus. Okay, let's just write this down. This is like the basics. You know, I'm talking to you like fourth graders, but what the heck? Let's go through the basics. We never lose if we review what we already know. Shomachinu is chai for what?
Negligence.
Okay, good. You're writing for Art School, Josh. Okay, good. So what's that called in Lashon Kodesh? Pshia. Excellent. Pshia. Okay. Number two. Shomer Socher, he's paid for his shmirah. What kind of level of Christ does he have? Gneva Aved. Shia is for everybody, but we add to him Gneva Aved. Okay, Gneva Aved. I'm not sure about Gzeil. Gzeil gets complicated because some Rishonim hold that Gzeil is an onus because he comes with armor. But if, let's say, a person sneaks in stealthily and steals something, that's called Gneva. For example, the Gemara in Bava Kamma says that a Shomer Socher, if he's given money, cash, to watch in a deposit, that Achrayus is Machayv him to do what? Anybody remember? If you learned a little Bava Kamma, Bava Metzia. Remember we spoke about Bal Yatman? What does he have to do with this cash?
Somebody finds cash.
No. If you give me your cash to watch, and I get paid for it.
You put it in your own safe, right?
In a safe, but in the Gemara's language, the Gemara didn't use the word safe, which in modern Hebrew is called a kasefet, if you happen to know. But rather, the Gemara says, ein lo kesef, ein lo shmira ela bekarka. It means you have to dig it up. The Gemara has a famous case of Tzrifa de Urvene, if you remember that, where he hid the money he hid the money in a place which was a pshia for fire. It's a very flammable place. It's called a tree for durban. It's some sort of a hut. But it's shmira for gneva. So as far as sreif is concerned, he was poshev. But as far as gneva is concerned, he did a good job. But the Gemara says he's chayev if it gets stolen, because he could have done a better level of shmira. Ein lo shmira el bekak. Okay, fine. So that's called a shomer sachar. His level of chayes exceeds beyond that of a shomer sachar, of a shomer chinam. It includes not only pshia but also gneva. Vavim. Fine. Then we get to the highest level of shmira. Shol. He's chayev even for onsen. And certainly for Gzeilav Aveda, and certainly for Pshi. Yesh B'chal Masai Mona, that's the way the pyramid goes. In the case of a Shoel, who takes full Achrayus, okay, that's why I emphasize that word Shlema, it's an Achray Shlema, so your paradigm of an Achray Shlema is that you pay even for onus. Lightning strikes and kills the animal. What could I have done? It was time for the animal to be taken to its eternal repose. So what are you blaming me for? The answer is that a shoel is bios. A shoel, it's like his. It's like he lost his own thing. If I own an animal and it gets killed in a car accident, so I wasn't at fault, but I'm out the animal. You know, I'm out. I just lost its value. That's called shalom. That's called bios.
We're saying he's also worked for a non-Jew, or these are just for a Jew?
Okay, so in the case, now I'm not sure what you mean, who's the mafkin and who's the nifka, but let's say I'm going to take your question the way I want to take it, and let's assume that the mafkin is the guy. No, he's the owner of the object. The shomer, the nifkad, is the Yisrael. Okay, so here, in order to clinch the shmira, what do you need, Daniel? It's not enough to make a verbal statement, and that's not if the Jew just says it, he also needs what?
I'm spacing the word.
Kanumiyad. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You need a kinyan. We learned it.
What the Mishnah
Berurah is. Mishnah Berurah is that. Kanumiyad. That was his line. You need a kinyan. Okay? So you need a kinyan. So if a guy gives the Jew chametz and a kinyan is made, then the Israel has what's called achrayus, that's called pikdono shel nachri. If it's chametz, the Israel's in deep trouble, because if he maintains the status of this quasi-ownership over the chametz, midin achrayus, he's going to violate which isur? Again, if we assume that Bali Ron and Bali Matzah are two different isur, which isur will he violate? Lo Yimatzah. Because the Torah left out the word. So what we see here is a tension between lo yira lecha and lo yimatzeh, which drops the word lecha, and the pshara, the compromise to reconcile this conflict, this controversy, is going to be what? Pikdonos shel nachri. Pikdonos shel nachri is, shall we say, 50% away from zero bialus towards bialus, but it's 50% towards zero bialus away from bialus. It's middle of the road bialus. It's a chrayistik of bialus. An achrayistik of bailus could be defined in one of three ways. Either because you have to give basic shmira, as opposed to what? What's the flip side of basic shmira? Pshia. We got to get that word, okay? Leave out negligence for a minute. Pshia. Or a higher level achrayus, that of a shomer sachar, which means I'm chayv even for what? Gneva v'aveda. Or perhaps, in order to generate this quasi-bailus of achrayus, I need the highest level of achrayus, achrayus shlema, that of a shoel, which includes not only pshia and gneva v'aveda, but also includes what? Onus. Circumstances beyond my control.
How do you know Lo Yira is talking about your own chametz? Not someone else's, even. That just lecha.
Yiroi lecha means lecha shalcha. That's a universal rule, hardcore rule. Anywhere in the Torah, Chazal always interpret the Torah when it says lecha, it means yours. Okay then? Good. Now, at the end of the day, once we work out this compromise between lo yiroi and lo yimatzeh, what's the b'risa going to do? What's it going to do with lo yira lo yimatzeh?
Combine.
And therefore, in the case of pikdono shel nachri, even though it doesn't fit the bill of lecha, nevertheless, I'm going to violate the isur of lo yimatzeh. Do you hear that? That's the punchline of this whole sugya. So, for example, lo yakmin. Let's say I take my chametz, I dig a ditch, and I hide my chametz in the bottom of the ditch. I can't see it, so it's no lo yirah. Will I violate lo yirah?
No.
I will.
Yeah.
Because lamaskan, at the end of the day, we're going to combine these two lafim and see them as working in tandem. They each contribute some element to the puzzle that I didn't know before. So if I only had lo yirah, I would not know lo yimotze, which is the case of atmana. Now that I have lo yimotze, it's a gili milsa. It reveals the nature of the violation of lo yirah as well. Say, how many malchus am I going to get for bal yakmin at the end of the day?
Why not?
So you're not following.
Why not? Because it's combined in the end of the day.
But it's two lavim, but the substance is identical.
How do you do that?
Because again, you violate two lavim, and then each lav reveals something about the nature of the other lav. So what Lo Yimotze does, it's going to expand Lo Yirah, and what Lo Yirah is going to do, it's going to expand Lo Yimotze. Lo Yirah is going to also restrict Lo Yimotze, because if I only had Lo Yimotze, I would assume I cannot have Chomet Shel Goy in my possession, even without Kabbalah Sakrayis. Zero Akrayis. But the Torah says Lo Yimotze without the word Lecha. Comes the word Lecha in Lo Yirah, and reveal something about Lo Yimotze. A Lecha. You know, we're going to take the word Lecha from Lo Yirah and inject it into Lo Yimotze, but in a different sort of meaning, with the compromise of the two. So now, the Lo Yimotze without the word Lecha reveals that the Lecha of Lo Yirah is not an absolute requirement of Lecha. It's not the full Bailus, it's something less than the full Bailus, and that's going to be Achrayus. That's going to be Pikdon HaShulnah. Alright, let's see it in song. Now, what I want you to be sensitive to as we go through the Braisa is, how does the Braisa at the end of the day know that each lav is going to reveal something about the other lav and have them working as a part?
So if you're over one of them, you're over both of them?
Correct. There's no way of being over one lav without the other.
Why? If you don't see it, but you still can find it.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I want you to watch this Braisa and see if you can tell me how the Braisa is able to derive the conclusion that at the end of the day you always violate both. It's a partnership. And each lav reveals something about the other lav. How do we know that? That's what I'm asking you as a challenging question now, to see if you can go through the Braisa with me and see how the Braisa knows that at the end of the day there are two separate lavim, but they're equal. Meaning you violate two lavim on every single occasion.
They're two but one?
It's always going to be two. It's two or zero.
No, I'm saying
there's never one.
It's two lavim, but they're one together.
They're one. It's two lavim with one substance.
What's another example of something with two lavim?
Okay, let's say lo signo velo sashok. Okay, oshek is an expansion of lo signo, but whenever you expand lo signo based on lo sashok, you're going to violate two lavim. I'll impress you, you know, as if I was the Rosh Shiva, and I'll tell you that's a sugi Bab Metzia Samachal. Okay? Not because I know all of Bab Metzia by heart. Okay?
But he knows all the Shas by heart.
Right. Sure. Flattery will get you everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Listen, I know a few things about some things, but I can't say I know Shas. That's not at this point in my life. My wife always says I will know Shas. Okay, she has great faith in me. What does this teach me? Since the Torah seems to be repeating itself, there must be some chidush that's inherent in the pasuk of Lo Yimotze. And the Braisa goes on to answer this question. Lefi shenema. Are you listening to the niggun? The niggun is very important. Yeah. It's like Trump, you know, Tommy Amik. Lefi shenemar lo yirolecha. Shalchaya taroa. Abla taroa shalachirim shalgavoa. You're allowed to see chametz that belongs to others. Either belongs to others, says Rashi, a guy owns the chametz, or alternatively, it belongs to gavoa. What's another word for gavoa?
Hashemesh.
Hekdesh.
Why is Roger saying a goy? Do we just...
Oh, excellent. What would be... This is a gigantic discussion. If we have time for it, I don't know if we'll have time to... What would be if Shimon's chametz is in Reuven's backyard? Meaning, the Gemara excludes the case of chametz shel nachri according to Rashi. Achirim is a word in Shas that refers to nachri. It doesn't refer to other Jews. Apparently, Rashi seems to be pointing to the following conclusion. If Shimon's chametz is in Reuven's possession, then Reuven's going to violate the Isur by Yerubai Matzah. And that itself is going to engender a different literature. Well, what about Shimon in this case? Are we saying that Reuven violates Bal Yerubai Matzah because it's Shimon's chametz in his possession? Shimon is now exempted from Bal Yerubai Matzah. Or are we saying they both violate Bal Yerubai Matzah?
Absolutely, both.
And both reminds us, who can impress me here? It reminds us of something that we discussed in the past. Maskir and Socher, anybody remember that? With the Torah Chaim? Completely gone. Okay. I'm not going to get depressed. I'm just devastated. Okay. So the Brisa says, Talmud Lomar, Lo Yimotze. Oh, Yachol. What does Yachol mean?
Able.
What does Yachol always introduce? Whenever you see the word Yachol, it's Shas Bavli. I can't talk to you about Yerushalmi, but in Bavli. Yachol always introduces what?
Answer.
Excellent. There's my man. You have a good chavrusa. He's a little bit faceless, but Yachol Yat Mikabel Pikdonus Minan Nachri. It would seem then, if I only had Lo Yirah Lecha, Yirah to the exclusion of Hatmana, and Lecha to the exclusion of Pikdono Shel Nachri, Talmud Lomar Lo Yimotze. Yeah, it's interesting. In the case of Al Yatman, there's no pshara. Did you notice that? There's no middle stage between Lo Yirah and Lo Yimotzeh. It's an either-or situation. It's either black or white. There's nothing powerful or neutral in the middle. In the case of Lecha, not Lecha, there's a neutral ground, which is called Pikdonos Shel Nachri. So Lo Yimotzeh is going to expand to Pikdonos Shel Nachri, but not to Chametz Shel Acherim. Chametz Shel Acherim is bounced off by virtue of the Lecha of Lo Yirah. So the Havamina here, even if we separate the two Yisurim, okay, what I'm suggesting is that when it comes to the question of Lecha, that was discrepancy number one on your chart, whereas Lo Yirah has Lecha, Lo Yimotze drops Lecha, there's going to be a middle of the ground. We're going to find a compromise which is midway between the polar extremes. It's midway between Lo Yimotze without Lecha and Lo Yirah with Lecha. That's called Pikdonos Shel Nachri, which Pikdonos means what? What's the key concept? Ach Rayos. But in the case of Bal Yatmin, which was the second discrepancy, and that's the discrepancy between Lo Yirah means I don't see it, and Lo Yimotzeh means I cannot have access to it, even if it's dug down below the ground, here the Braisa doesn't find any sort of compromise. Here the tug of war ends in a single success story. The winner of the game is going to be Lo Yimotzeh. Lo Yimotzeh is now going to expand this. This, by the way, is going to bother the minds of the Mefarshei HaTanakh, those commentaries on the Torah itself, on scriptures. Because how can it be that the Torah uses the word Lo Yirah? Lo Yirah is misleading. It implies that Bal Yatmin, Hatmana, would be acceptable, be permissible. That's not true because we have Lo Yimotzeh. Why didn't the Torah just repeat the word Lo Yimotzeh twice, adding Lecha, adding the Gvulecha as opposed to Bebatim? The whole thing is confusing to us. Because at the end of the day, Lo Yirah teaches us absolutely nothing. The word Yirah, that word itself. Lo Yimotzeh teaches me even if it's Bal Yatmin. What does Lo Yirah teach me?
You can't see it.
Well, but if Lo Yimotzeh is greater if you had two circles. The smallest circle, the inner circle, would be Lo Yirah. The largest circle, which surrounds Lo Yirah and expands upon it, this reminds me of a sugya Bava Basra called Makif and Nikaf, which we studied here last year in this very classroom. So you have one circle and then another circle. Bal Yimotzeh is the greatest circle. What does Lo Yirah teach me?
Assumption.
No, what? At the end of the day, what do I gain? What do I walk away with from the pasuk Lo Yirah?
You can't have a chometz in there.
But I know that for Lo Yimotzeh. Lo Yimotzeh is even a greater expanded.
Even if it's hidden.
So why do I need this misleading word Lo Yirah? Why did the Torah mislead me in order to correct me?
But even if it's not yours.
Oh, okay, but that doesn't justify the word lo yirah. That justifies the word lecha. But why do I have to say lo yirah lecha? What is lo yirah teaching?
So obviously, there's a sins aspect of it.
Well, I don't know what it is.
Does that mean
what's the difference between lo yakmin? Let's say I dig it up. So now I violate another iser? Yeah, something changed as a fault that I exposed the comments to my vision. I don't understand what lo yirah is. Lo yirah seems to be an empty set. It only confuses. It doesn't clarify. Okay, keep that question in mind. Now the Gemara goes on and says the following: Ainli elin nachri shaloki bashto. This is your classical nachri. You know, he's a regular citizen, rank and file, just like you're a citizen. He's a citizen. That's called loki bashto. The ain shari imcha bechatz. He doesn't live in your backyard. What's the deal with a nachri sheki bashto? Maybe I violate Bal Yerov by Yimotze if he is kavush tachas yodi. If I've conquered him in a war situation, I've taken him captive, now he works for me, he's like an evid of mine, I can confiscate his property. Or shori imcha v'chatz, he lives in my possession, so his chatz is my chatz.
I thought you're allowed to sell your chametz yisof, but not in Jew, and leave it in your house. So don't we do that today, nowadays?
Correct. Because... Oh, you're asking, you mean I have a chrayis? No, because I don't have a chrayis.
Why?
No, let's say the rabbi sells the chametz to...
We do it to...
We'll
like
call him John Paul Jones, right. Okay? And let's say the chametz goes up in flames. Does John Paul Jones come and sue me for damages?
No.
So the answer has to be no. Meaning, I don't have any chrayis on that chametz. He has acquired ownership on the chametz. It's located physically in my backyard, but I don't accept the chrayis.
Let's say inside your house, same thing.
Same thing. I don't accept the chrayis on it. It's chametz shel achim. What about a case where the chametz is owned by a guy, either because he inherited from his great grandfather or because I sold it to him? It's irrelevant, but it's owned by the guy. But this guy is kavush tachas yodi. That's called kibashto.
Then you'd be in trouble.
Okay, let me give you an example. This is going to take us off. Remind me to talk to you about a ger toshav on Shabbos. In other words, there are cases where I'm obligated to see to it that the ger toshav, who's under my domain, observes the Shabbos. Not because he's obligated to observe the Shabbos, he's only a ger toshav, he only has 7 mitzvahs, but because of his relationship to me, I have to see to it that he's not working on my behalf. Okay? So the same thing here, if the nachri is kavush tachas yadi, his possessions to some extent belong to me, and therefore I would violate Bal Yerov by Yimotze with a kind of quasi-ownership if his chametz is somehow related to me. Rashi here used the term mamono kimamoni. His mamon is like my mamon. It's almost as if I possess it. Okay. So let's see it inside. Gemara says, the Brisa says the following. And lo yimotze bevateichem is going to include lo yimotze bevateichem somehow is a mute. I mean, the Gemara is going to explain this later. I don't know if you got this far. It says lo yimotze twice, and the double lo yimotze is going to teach me to the exclusion of chametz shel nachri, that I don't violate by rov yimotze, even though it's a nachri sheki bashto. That's going to be rov shita at the end of it. Ainli ela shebevatid. I only know based on the pasuk of lo yimotze bevateichem that I violate this isur, or this series of isur, two lava. If the chametz is where? In my house. Bevoros, v'shichin moros, v'nayin, tavaloma bechol, kvulech the pasuk of lo yiroeh. And once again, there's no pshar over here, there's no compromise. So you wonder again why the Torah lo yimotze confused me by saying bevateichem. Why did it say bechol kvulecha? There's nothing left at the end of the day that I derive from the word bimatechem. There's no more severe avera or an extra isur if the chametz is in my bias, because v'chol gvulech, like the largest circle, encompasses the bias as well. V'adayin ani omer, but I would still assume that these two lavim are separate lavim. Therefore, bibatim, if it's in the inner circle, that's called the bias, that's where my chametz is, over mishum b'yiro b'yimotze. I certainly violate b'yimotze, because it says b'chol v'v'v'atechem. I certainly violate b'al yiroah because it says b'chol gvulecha. U'bal yatmin u'bal yikabel pikdonos min hanochri. Since b'al yimotze teaches me that I violate this isur even if it's hidden, it's still matzur, it's accessible, or even if it belongs to a guy, but I accepted achrayus on the chametz. But Bigvulin, maybe if it's outside my house, and once it's outside my house, then I drop Lo Yimotze, I can only violate which Isur?
Yeah.
Baal Yiroa. Ishal Chaya Taroa, Vla Taroa, Shal Chem, Shal Gavo. But there, if it's Chomet Shal Goy, I don't violate it at all, under any circumstance, because the Torah says Lacha. Minayin, how do I know? Litein etza omer shel zeb ozeb shel zeb ozeb. How do I know that this one teaches me about the other one? And I always violate both these surim, which means now it's the Gemara looking for a source for combining the two into one. Isur tamid lomar, siar siar ligzer shavu. Nemar, it says siar bibatin. Right? It says siar li matzim vatechet. Venemar siar bigvulin, lo yor lecha siar. Ma siar homer bibatin. Over mishum, right, where it doesn't say lecha, and it says lo yimotze, is over mishum bal yiroa bal yimotze bal yatmin bal yikabel pikdonos min anochrim af siar homa bigvulin over mishum bal yiroa bal yimotze bal yatmin bal yikabel pikdonos min anochrim umas siar homa bigvulin shal chayat aroa bal taroa shal chem shal gavoa af siar homa bigbatim shal chayat aroa bal taroa shal chem shal gavoa. So what's the answer to my original question? I asked you, how does this price at the end of the day derive the conclusion that both Isurim are really one, and they're part of a puzzle? Zereshava Siyar Siyar. Omar Mar, now the Gemara analyzes this price. Ainli Ela B'Nachri Shaloki Bashto.
Go back 1 second.
Yeah.
When it says Lo Yimitza, and then...
Lo Yimotze?
Yeah, Lo Yimotze.
Right.
Regarding... What is it? Lo Yimotze? It right. Says... It says
Shekibash, so that's what we're going to get to now.
I'm saying that one still covers it. Why doesn't Loi Matze cover?
Right, so let's go through. That's the sugi now. Now Omar Mar is addressing the issue of Nachri Shekibash. Okay, we're going to now read the Bryce and try to understand it, make it give some integrity, some logical integrity to the Bryce. Omar Mar, the Bryce says Eli Elavin Nachri Shaloki Bashto. The ain't shari imo bechatzer, a foreigner. I have no relationship whatsoever to this nachri. I haven't conquered him in war. He's not subjugated under my subjugation. He's not living with me in the chatzer. His rishus is not my rishus. It's his rishus. He's totally independent, totally separate of me, far, far away. Nachri shekibashto v'shari imcha bechatzer minayin. But what if I have some relationship to him? I've conquered him, or he's living in my chatzer. Minayin, how do I know? Talmud lomar lo yimotze. From the pasuk lo yimotze. Lo yimotze. So the Gemara asks, klape laya. Rashi explains what klape laya means. Klape laya, the end of the skinny lines. Klape hecha notu dobrzeha ipcha bistavra. Everything should be the exact opposite. Nachri shekibashto mistavra di osur tfei. Which one is more chamur? If the chametz belongs to a foreigner, or if it belongs to your slave, we'll call him. That should be more chamur.
Yes.
And yet, if you look at the brisa, you certainly get the impression that what we're doing now is, let's go back to the Bryce again. It says, Lo Yimotze, Ein Li Ela B'Nachri Shalo Kibashto. Now, we're telling you that lo yimatze. What's lo yimatze in terms of chamet shel nafri? A chumra or a kula? Go back to your chart. It's a chumra, right? Because we dropped the word lecha. No, if it's a chumra, then ainli ela, I would only know X. I should be machmir and chamet shel nafri in the case, in the scenario of X. What scenario should that be? Kibashto or lo kibashto? It should be kibashto, because logically I should take kibashto as the chumrah of lo yimatzeh, dropping the word lecha and saying that you violate bal yirah and bal yimatzeh for the chametz shel agoy. So Abaye is so impressed by this question. I'm Rabbi Apuk. Abaye says, switch it around. There's a mistake in the gears in the version of the Raisa. It should read like this. Ainli el, I would only know that you violate for the chametz shel nakri in a case of nakri shekibashto. Or sharim of b'chatzah. Nachri shaloki bashto. The ain sharim of b'chatzah minayin. How do I know that even if he's a stranger to me, and this, we cut the umbilical cord, there's no relationship whatsoever between this guy and me. Nevertheless, since in lo yimatzeh that doesn't say l'cha, I violate this isur, that's called apuch. Rava Amar, Rava's not so excited about changing the ration, the safe for the price, the whole sequence of this price. Liolam lo tepuch. But rather, our ratio, very often, if you have a price that goes A, B, then it goes back to A again. So the original statement was that since it says lecha, in which pasuk? Lo yiroah, and that excludes and exempts me in the case of chametz shel nachri, that's called chametz shel acherim, is then Now the Brisa reads fluently, except for we're going to have one problem. But it flows beautifully because now we're taking up the case which is kal, which is an easier case, meaning I have no relationship to this guy. That's being excluded and exempted from the pasuk lo yiroah lecha. Nachri shekibashim sharim b'chatz minan. How do I know that I can have chametz that belongs to a guy in my rishus, even if he's kibashto, he's shari imcha b'chatzeh? Talmud lomar lo yimatzeh. Wait a minute. It should have said Talmud lomar lo yiroah lecha. Are you following me? There's something fluky here in Rav. And on the one hand, I give Rav a great round of applause because he maintains the sequence in the Brisa that the case that starts first is the kula case. And we might think in the Chumra case of Kibashto, where I have a definite relationship, maybe I should violate the Isur. Now, it's, even though it's Achim Shal, it's Chomet Shal Achirim, which was excluded under the Pasuk of what? Chomet Shal Achirim was excluded under which Pasuk? Lo Yimatzel Lo Yiroah Lecha. Right? That's why I asked you to write this down. I guess you didn't get a chance. Okay? Lo Yiroah Lecha excludes Chomet Shal Achirim. What about the case when the guy has a definite relationship with me? He's kibashto, or he's shari imcha b'chatzeh. So now, I want to extend the kula, according to Rav's pshat in this brisa, the kula of shalacherim, to knock off even the case of nachri sheh kibashto. So what kind of pasuk should I quote? The lo yirah pasuk, which is machmir, or the lo yimatzeh pasuk, the lo yimatzeh pasuk, which is machmir, because it doesn't say lecha, or the shalo yirah pasuk, which is mekil. I want to extend the kula of shalacherim even to the case of nachri shekibashto. So, which of the two psukim would make sense to quote? Lo yirah lecha, and instead it says Talmud lomar lo yimatzeh. So the Gemara right away pounces on Rava. How does Gemara pounce on Rava? V'hai Tana, the Tana, the author of this Brisa, mihader ahetera. He's looking for a heter to be makil even the case of chametz shel goyus kibashto v'nasiv, and he brings lekra lisura, and he brings the pasuk of lo yimatzeh, which doesn't say lecha. So the Gemara answers mishum shenemar lecha lecha trei zimni. Okay, so let's take a look at Rashi, lecha lecha trei zimni, and this will be, if you count down from the beginning of the wide lines in Rashi, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. It says shenema begvulim b'si'ar lecha lecha trei zimni. It says lo yura lecha siyar b'chal gvulecha shivas yomim. That's in Parshas Re'eh. And in Parshas Bo, it says uksiv lo yura lecha chametz v'lo yura lecha siyar b'chal gvulecha. So regarding siyar b'gvulim, the Torah repeats lecha twice. Wouldn't once have sufficed? So why did the Torah feel compelled to write the word lecha not once but twice? The second time is completely superfluous. Im eino inyan, okay, that's a famous mechanical principle in Shas. Im eino inyan, if I don't need it here, then I thrust it, I cast it over there. Im eino inyan lahay lecha b'gvulin gavi re'iya to kfar amur the kfar amur, because we already have the word lecha and gvulin back in Parshas Re'eh. Tneu inyan lelo yimotze, I take the word lecha and I throw it into lo yimotze as if it said lo yimotze lecha udrosh bein. What do I derive from that? Lo yimotze lecha, meaning af b'motze yetz lecha. Even though it's motze lecha, it's still not considered lecha. Even though it's accessible to you, it's motze. V'hainu shari imcha, he lives in your chatzer. Kaminan, I still insist lecha that it's not yours. The ain chametz asalim came. Shelcha avlata motzia shelo, you're allowed to have the chametz shelo in your rishus, even though it belongs to a nachrisha kibashto, and even though it's sharui imcha bechatzus. That's called lecha lecha trezim me. Omar mar, we're on the first of the wide ones. Yachal yakmin v'yakabel pikdonus min anachri. I might think that you're allowed to dig and hide your chametz under the ground, or you're allowed to accept a pikdon from anachri. Talmud lomar lo yimotze. The fact that the Torah lo yimotze omitted the word lecha, it teaches you that you violate this avera, even though the chametz belongs to a guy. So the Gemara says, Ha'amit Reisha. But in the Reisha you said, Shalchaya Taro Avala Taro Shalachem Shalgavod. There seems to be an absolute head-on collision in this Braisa regarding Chamet Shal Nochri. From the word Lecha in the Pasuk Lo Yira, we excluded Chamet Shal Nochri. But from the absence of the word Lecha Lo Yimatze, we included Chamet Shal Nochri. Lo Kasha, it's not a contradiction. Hada kibul aleach rais, hada lo kibul aleach rais. If a guy comes in with a bag of chametz and he plops it on my desk, on my living room table, do I violate Bal Yiroh by Matzeh because he took the initiative and gave me his chametz? The answer is no. Lecha, avalat haroah, shalachim, shalgavoh. But what if he comes over and he says, Rabbi Berzon, I have this big, beautiful basket of whiskey, of common sticker whiskey. Would you do me a favor and take good care of it? And accept upon yourself responsibility to guard it, safeguard it. And then I say, okay, I'm willing to accept it. I make a kinyan. I shake his hand and I say, yeah, that's a great deal. And maybe he's paying me for it. Oh, then I'm in deep trouble. Then I invoke the pasuk lo yimotze with the absence of the word lecha. That's called pikdonos shel nokri, and I violate this avera, and through the siyar sorry gzera shava, violate even lo yira. So I get two sets of makas. Why? Because I was makabel achrayus. Once I'm makabel achrayus, I have a quasi bialus over it, enough to violate these two isurim. What is the nature of my achrayus? How many different possibilities do we have? Three. Either it's the achrayus low level of what? The basic level of Christ, new Rabbi say Shomer Chinam, or it's the higher level of a Shomer Sofer. It's the highest level, the complete Christ of what? Of a Shoel that he's chayv even for own sin. And the Gemara illustrates this. Ki hadi amar luhu Rava l'bnei Mechuza. Like Rava said to the people, the members of his city, b'nei Mechuza, that's the name of Rava's city. And in his city there were b'nei Chela. Who were the b'nei Chela?
We just discussed this.
B'nai Chela, Chayalim, what are the B'nai Chela?
Oh, yeah, the legions.
Right, the legions that come through B'nai, and they stop in Mechuzah. What do we give them? What do we have to give them? Whether we like it or not.
Food.
We got to. What'd you say?
Lodging. I said lodging.
Oh, lodging, maybe that too. You're probably right.
That was the British. We got a new art school guy.
New art school guy, who's that?
Lodging.
Oh, but logic.
I said logic. Lodging. I said logic.
Stop logic, logic, no, logic. No. Okay. Okay. You remind me of a story. You know, a few years ago, there was a war in Gaza. I mentioned it to Daniel before. and a whole battalion of soldiers, about 600 soldiers, were stuck. They couldn't get back to their base on time on the way out of Gaza. And on their way, it was getting dark. The closest place that they could lodge was Migdal HaEmek. Does anybody know who the rabbi of Migdal HaEmek is? You have to know about this man if you know. His name is Rav Grossman. He's probably the saint of our generation. In any event, he has a campus, an educational campus in Migdal HaEmek, that's up north, and he invited 600 chayalim to sleep over on campus. They did an amazing mifza project. They got beds from all over the place. They fed them. The guys took showers. They hadn't taken showers in who knows how long. And it was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. That's Rav Grossman. Some people call him. He has a nickname.
He had a roof somewhere?
Yeah, because he has a tremendous campus. So they moved in beds from here and there. And
that's crazy.
He has a nickname. I'm trying to remember how it goes. In English, it would be what? Okay, it'll come to me. Oh yeah, discotheque. He's called a discotheque rabbi. Because this man, who by the way looks like he just stepped out of Meir Sharim, because he just did step out of Meir Sharim, his father still lives in Meir Sharim. He looks exactly like Meir Sharim, you know, with the pais and everything. And he goes into discos. Not to dance, but to be Makariv Jews. And he's pulled out like tons of guys from discos. And they're now learning in his yeshiva. So they call him the disco rabbi. There's a whole movement in Israel to appoint him as chief rabbi of Israel. But he can't take it.
He's got to be pretty pious.
Is that the one where he won't accept. The guy who bought the guy a car? He bought someone a car because he said it was what would it take you to become from? And he said a Ferrari, and a month later he got him the Ferrari.
Really? Maybe. It sounds like a Ferrari.
The guy come from?
Huh? I assume the guy.
After he crashed the Ferrari.
If you have any friends who live in Muncie and are wealthy, they probably support his institutions because Muncie is known. They have a dinner every year. They raise major bucks for the disco rabbi, for Rabbi Grossman. And Rabbi Grossman tries to come in every year for that dinner. Rabbi Grossman, if he can't come, he sends his brother, who's also very good. But
there's also Rabbi Grossman.
Right. So what do we have over here? We have a story with Rava. Ki hadam haRava lebnei Mechuza be'iru chamira debnei chela mibataychu. Get rid of the chametz of the bnei chela. The government is forcing the Jews in bnei chela to put good pitot on the table here. Feed these chayalim. Get rid of that before chametz, before Pesach. Why? Kavan, since the ilu mignav v'ilu misvid, if it will get stolen or get lost. Birshu saichu kai. It's in your rishus. Ube'isu l'shlume, and you'll have to pay. If somebody steals this bread, you're going to have to replace it. Kidilchun dami, it's like it's yours. V'asu, and therefore you violate by Rabbi Matzah. So there are a number of ways in which the poskim say you can get out of this situation. Either you mavatel the chametz, maybe you have to sell it to another nochri. So the Gemara is going to say, Ha Nicha, this will pick up to next time. It's Hashem. Next time we meet is when? I know, on Tzom Gedalia, do we have a Shia?
Yeah.
What time is the Shia on Tzom Gedalia? So, Rabosai, can we make a deal between us? Don't tell the administration that we. that we anybody know how to erase part of a tape that we can we get together like earlier on Wednesday, you know what I'm saying, like we'll sneak in here because on a fast day like make it 11 or something like that.
Sounds good.
Alright, so honey, this will pick up on Wednesday when we bereave the loss of Gedalia. He was a great guy, Gedalia. Dovar going to the moment kimom and dobi eleman diomer laugh kimom and dobi my ikal and memer shani hocha diomer lo yimot say ikal diomer hani chal about diomer dovar going to the moment laugh kimom and dobi and that for enough hainu ditzrich lo yimot eleman diomer kimom and dobi lo yimot zu lomale and that's where we're going to stop. Okay, for anyone who wants to stay a little bit longer, first we'll take our seventh inning stretch. I want to introduce you. I'd like to introduce to you new sperm that I find that come out on the market. This you know this book?
Yeah, Shemeshul. I have this.
Oh man, it's only one volume. Am I right?
The Hebrew one is
The Hebrew one is Parsha, major volume. But this English one is one volume.
Yeah.
And I was flipping through it to see if he has anything for Rosh Hashanah about shofar blowing, and he has something very, very beautiful with regard to the shofar. So I'd like to share that with you. You can come a little bit closer because we're only a small group. Okay. He starts with a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that says that you can use a shofar from any animal with the exception of one animal, and that's the keren hapara, the horn of a cow. That you're not allowed to use. And the reason for this is because, as the Gemara explains there, Rosh Hashanah Chavav, ein kategor nasa sanegar, which means that the purpose of the shofar is to be a sanegar. How would you translate sanegar?
Defendant.
A defendant, right? And the shofar is that defendant, and it cannot serve as a kategor. The horn of a cow, the cow being the mother of the egel, is a right. It reminds Hashem of the chet egel. That's called kategor. That's the prosecutor. So you cannot use the defendant if the defendant, by its very nature, is a prosecutor. So then the Gemara says, wait a minute. What about the fact that the Kohen Gadol wears what's called Bigdei Zahav? That means he's got in his begadim gold, and gold itself reminds Hashem, whatever that means, reminds Hashem, in quotation marks, of the Chet HaEgel, which, remember, was made of gold, because Aaron collected the gold, and then he threw it into the fire, became an Egel. So how can the Kohen Gadol, who's certainly the Sanegar par excellence, who's going in to the Kodesh Kadoshim and pleading on our behalf, how can he wear gold? So instead, what does the Kohen Gadol do?
The linen stuff.
Right, he wears the linen stuff. That's called Big Day Lavan. Yeah, no. The Big Day Kuna is either Big Day Zav or Big Day Lavan. But when he goes Lifnai V'Lifnim to really recite the major praise and do the most, he changes.
Yeah.
What does he do between the changing? This is relevant to what we discussed a few weeks ago. You remember what that's called?
Kiddush is the washing and the
Kiddush?
Yeah,
Dayim V'Raglayim. We spoke about it a few weeks ago.
But I thought that's not the
mikvah
part, is it? I thought that's the
washing. No, it's not mikvah. This is the kiddush yadayim v'raglayim, and then he does. I think he does tefillah as well, if I'm not mistaken. So then he puts on the big day lavan and he goes lifnai v'lifnim inside the kodesh kadoshim. He does the avodah the ketores, which is the pinnacle, the apex of the avodas yom kippur. So the Gemara says that the problem of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegar only exists, apparently, in the Kodesh Kadoshim. If the Kohen Gadol is outside the Kodesh Kadoshim, then he can wear the Bigdei Zav, because the Kodesh Kadoshim does the Avodah outside the Kodesh Kadoshim in Bigdei Zav. So you see that there's no problem with Kategor Sanegar except in the Kodesh Kadoshim when he wears the Bigdei Lavan. Therefore, shofar should not be a problem. So what if you want to use the shofar of a cow? Who cares? The shofar is not Lifnai V'Lifnim. So the Gemara answers that shofar is lifnai v'lifnim. Kevan de lezichron kasi, since it's coming for Hashem to remember us, it's like the apex of the avodah, the Yom HaKippurim avodah of the Kohen Gadol, it's kilifnai v'lifnim. We consider it as if the shofar is blown inside the Beis HaMikdash in the Kodesh Kadosh. Now, the Shemi Shmuel is bothered by this. He says, all mitzvos, no matter what mitzvah we do, is lizikaron, it brings Hashem to remember Klal Yisrael, any mitzvah that we do. Why then is shofar singled out with this special din that it's kilifnai v'lifnim because it's lizikaron, and therefore ain't kategen asem, we can't use the shofar? And he quotes a Pirkei de Rabbi Elezer, which is going to bring us to answer this question, or at least bring us closer to answer the question. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Shamayim. Who remembers on what calendar date? When he goes up after the Chet Ha'Egel.
40 days before Yom Kippur.
Yeah, what's that date? We spoke about it many times.
Rosh Chodesh
El. Okay. So he goes on Rosh Chodesh El. And Hashem says, come up the mountain. Right? Kum Alei Alaha. Now what happens? They blow the shofar. Why did they blow the shofar? So before we get to answer why they blow the shofar, let's remember that they made a mistake, a grave error, on the first round when Moshe went up, Because of what?
They didn't make a
calculation. Remember, they made a miscalculation? And they thought that Moshe would have been down already, and he wasn't coming down. And they got all frightened, and then they worshipped the idol. On the second round, Hashem wanted to guarantee that this miscalculation would not be made. So therefore they blew the shofar the minute that Moshe Rabbeinu ascended up the mountain. That shofar was like a clock almost that told the people to count 40 days from that moment in such a way that the calculation would be accurate, they wouldn't make any mistakes, and they wouldn't worship the eagle again. So then, in order to ensure that they wouldn't make the same mistake, they blew the shofar. So the Shemesh Shmuel is bothered by this as well. Why the shofar? I mean, couldn't you think of any other ways of marking the time that Moshe went up the mountain? Could they blow a whistle? They could have achieved the same exact purpose in many other ways. And these are the two questions that the Shemesh Shmuel asks. Again, let's go over the two questions. Number one, why is it Dafka the shofar that's called Lifnai V'Lifnim Kevin de Lezichron Kasi? Any mitzvah done by Klal Yisrael, performed by Klal Yisrael, is Lezikaron. So why do we single out the shofar? Number two, why was the shofar chosen? Why is it necessary to choose the shofar as the measuring rod, as the reminder that Klal Yisrael would know exactly when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain? Those are his two questions.
The shofar is the Kodesh Kavishin?
The Gemara says that the shofar is blown kaviyachal, meaning as if in the Kodesh Kadosh.
That's why you can't use it.
And why? And that's why you can't use shofar. And why is it considered as if you blew it in the Kodesh Kadosh? Because it's lezichron kasi. He says, why the shofar? Any mitzvah is lezichron. Any mitzvah that's performed by Klal Yisrael has the power and the ability to bring the remnants, the remembrance of Klal Yisrael in front of the high throne of HaKadosh Baruch. Why single out the shofar? And secondly, why was the shofar chosen as the vehicle to notify the people exactly what time, at what point Moshe went up the mountain? So I'm not sure that we're going to be able to finish this today. And I apologize for that, but maybe we'll be able to find a time to finish it up. Let me just make a little bit more progress. There's Yerushalmi in Tainus that quotes Rav Yaakov Dromia, who came apparently from the south. And he says that there's a mitzvah to blow horns, not just on Rosh Hashanah, but also on a Yom Tanis, also on a fast day. Okay, this not every public fast day, but we're referring to fast days that are decreed because there's some impending doom, chas v'shalom, there's some public distress, and Chazal establish a fast day in order to defeat that gzerah, and they use a shofar. So Rav Yaakov Dromia says, why a shofar? Why blow a horn on a fast day? And the horn belongs to an animal. And Rabbi Yaakov says, consider us, we ask Hashem, as animals bellowing before you, you with a capital Y. What does this mean? Consider us as animals, right? Adam ubehema, David Mel says in Tillim, Adam ubehema toshia Hashem. So Rabbi Yehuda, in the Gemara in Chulin Daf Hei Amid Bei, says in the name of Rav, that Adam ubehema toshia Hashem, Hashem will save, what does it mean? Adam u'behema means a man who's like a behema. What does it mean, a man who's like a behema? What's positive about an animal? We don't want to compare a human being to an animal. But the answer is that the animals are humble. And a man should make himself humble like an animal. And Rashi explains that the animal has a certain crushed spirit. What does that mean? So the Shemi Shmuel suggests the following pshat. He says that the main goal of a Jew is submission to the will of God. Does anybody know what that means? Right, to accept the Ribbono Shel'Olam's will, to perform His will, even though you don't
understand
it. For example, Shalom, you're a great guy, in Kol Kavod L'cha, but if you tell me to do something, I'm going to start questioning you. I'm going to say, Shalom, why? You tell me to jump off a roof, why? You tell me to do something that's absolutely ridiculous, why should I do it? And a human being suspends his faculty of rationality in order to perform the will of God. He doesn't even ask any questions. And therefore, he's like an animal. When an animal is given a task, he behaves not because he understands what the master is. He follows the instruction of the master simply because that's the way he's trained. That's called crushed spirit. And one, meaning human being, is called upon in that sense to be like an animal, to follow the master of masters, meaning the Adon HaDonim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, without any calculations. I don't understand the reason behind it. So why do we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Rav Yitzchak says in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tezayin. What do you mean, why do we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Because Hashem says, blow the shofar. The Torah says, Yom Trua Yelachem. Torah tells you to blow, so blow the shofar. If that's what God's will is, that's how I fulfill it. It's Exeris HaKosev. I don't understand it. I do it solely because God commanded me. In that sense, the shofar, coming from an animal, is really projecting the teaching to man that he should strive for the greatest level, the highest level of divine service, which is when man makes himself Adam Kibahema, that he totally submits himself to the will of Hashem. And on a fast day that we're crying out to Hashem for Hatzolah, for Yeshua, we should do tshuva and renew that connection that's to Hashem, that's represented by the shofar, that expresses that true desire to accept God's will and fulfill it and implement it, even if we don't understand it, like the bellowing of an animal. So the blowing of the shofar on a tainis is the greatest expression of strengthening our connection, our subjugation, our bittul to Hashem, to accept every will and every command of Hashem, like the animal. And therefore, it's going to bring about that ritzui that hopefully God will stave off that decree and save the people of Israel. The problem with the Chet HaEgel was that the Jews made their own calculations. They were thinking, oh, is Moshe here? Is he not? Why didn't he come down? And they started violating the most severe Isser possible, the Isser of Avodah Zarah. So the Avera of the Egel really represents the antithesis of what the shofar represents. The shofar, therefore, when we blow it on Rosh Hashanah, is going to be the greatest tikkun to rectify the avera that brought about the Chet HaEgel. And therefore it makes sense, l'zikaron kasi, that that which really derailed the whole program, the whole project of Hashem, to bring to Klal Yisrael the luchos habris, and the will of Hashem, and to create that relationship, what derailed us was the fact that we weren't acting like the shofar. So it makes sense that on Rosh Hashanah, l'zikaron kai, it's the greatest act of ritzui that we can hope for. It's like t'lifnai v'lifnim l'zikaron, to recreate and reconnect the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch. And in that sense, it makes sense that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain on Rosh Chodesh Elul, they blew the shofar. What they were telling Klal Yisrael is, do tshuva, rectify your sin, become like the shofar, like Adam Ubehema Toshi Hashem. Subjugate yourself to the will of Hashem. Reconnect to God. That's what's going to make the tikkun on the Chet HaEgel. We understand very well why the shofar cannot be a kategor, it can't be shofar shofara. That would be absolutely antithetical to the message of the shofar, which tells us to be the opposite of what caused the Chet HaEgel. Instead of making our own calculations, our own machshavas, should we do this, should we do that, we should absolutely accept the will of Hashem. Okay then? So this is where we'll stop.